Everybody, welcome to the Good E-Reader Radio Show. The date is February 24th, 2011. We have a lot of news to report in the realm of tablet, Slate PCs, a little bit of digital publishing, and some e-reader news. We're going to cover today a lot of news regarding the HP Touchpad, when that's going to be out, some news on the iPad 2, Motorola Zoom. We'll talk about how Red Group, Borders, Angus and Robertson, White Cools, and they all go bankrupt in Australia and New Zealand, as well as a ton of other news. So we're going to get right to it with covering some tablet news here. It looks like the HP Touchpad, this was the big media event they had in San Francisco on the 16th or so of last month. And they revealed their first webOS tablet. Now, at the event, they didn't really say when it would be out or how much it would cost. But we do know that they're going to be hitting the store shelves in April. So a lot of retailers are going to be getting the touchpad around the end of March itself. But they won't be allowed to actually sell it in April. They say that HP eventually plans to sell about 4 to 5 million units of the touchpad this year, and this is their flagship product. If you want to know more about the stats and the specifics of the HP touchpad, you can go to our blog at goodereader.com/blog, and at the top right hand corner there is a search field. You can simply enter it there and check out all the specs as well as a ton of pictures and video. While we're on the subject of product news, so again, HP Touchpad will ship in April, and we have the iPad 2, which may be as launched as early as March the 2nd. There is going to be a huge Apple event happening very soon, and people are saying that 2nd of March, Apple has an event. They've already sent out media passes and press passes and let everyone know to come to a big event. And there really isn't much to say on these press things as much as there is a calendar and the word 2. And we all know that it is the iPad 2. There's a lot of rumors as far as a Qualcomm chip used to be the internal processor. A lot of people say it'll be the same resolution as the older iPad, but it'll be about half as thick. So it'll be really nice and slim and trim. It'll also have two cameras, one on the front, one on the back. The one on the front is going to be super feeble. It'll be less than 1 megapixel. But iPad does have a really good ecosystem going as far as being able to print things via AirPrint on a lot of HP wireless printers. And we all know the success of the iPad. They've pretty well raised the bar, and they're the device currently to beat. So with all the new tablets coming out this year, the iPad 2 is definitely going to be at the forefront of any type of tablet race to occur. We do have some news that Fujitsu will be releasing a Windows 7 tablet PC at CeBIT in Hanover. So the exact name of the device is the Stylistic Q550, which in our opinion won't win any marketing awards for ingenious names. Woe is the times when, you know, you're a company releasing a big product and you have, you know, numbers and alphanumeric sequences. Why can't you just call it some badass name like the Fujitsu Destroy Pad or the Fujitsu Tablet of Death, or, you know, something a little bit more marketable? You know, I kind of don't like whenever I see everybody coming out with the, you know, pads like the Touch Pad, the E Pad, the Wii Pad. There's so many tablets just capitalizing on the whole pad phase. I really wish that a lot of the marketing people that are working on tablets and responsible for ushering them out to the public can actually put witty, savvy tech names behind the products. That aside, the new tablet by Fujitsu is mainly aimed at enterprise customers. It'll have a ton of security features, a fingerprint reader, smart card reader, and a trusted platform module, which is a TMP. It'll have a 10.1-inch screen. It'll have a front and rear facing camera. It'll also be running Win 7 Professional, and it'll be running one of the brand new Intel Oak Trail Atom processors. There'll be two different models to choose from. One will have 32 gigs, the other one will be 64 gigs, and the highest model, which is no terms and prices, will have 3G. And both the 32 and 64 gig models will be functioning on solid state memory. So this will make boot times and everything like that be dramatically increased. For those of you who have solid state drives, you're lucky. For those of you who don't, quick breakdown is that hard drives have cylinders where solid state does not. So what a lot of people are doing is they're buying, you know, 100 gig, 300 gig solid state drives and putting them as their primary drive in their computer. And that's what they use to load their operating system. And operating systems load like under 10 seconds. So in 10 seconds flat, your entire OS, everything will be loaded. Solid state's the fastest memory right now. It's just not in very many devices. But hopefully, as we progress in 2011, when we have, you know, entrants like major companies like Fujitsu putting in solid state under the hood, hopefully it'll be a little bit better. More tablet news. So we'll just sort of round off the tablet news and we'll go into other things. The Samsung Galaxy Tab 8.9-inch was announced by the Yonhap News Agency in Korea. They're basically saying that there is going to be an 8.9-inch Android 3.0 tablet coming about towards the end of summer of 2011. So, you know, Samsung right now is really going to be hyping up the Samsung Galaxy 2. And this is the 10.1-inch tablet. This is sort of like the big brother to the original Samsung Galaxy Tab, which, in our opinion, and we've mentioned it a lot of times, that it is the Android tablet that is the current best of this current generation. This is before a lot of the other big-name tablets of this year, such as Motorola Zoom, BlackBerry Playbook, LG G-Pad, and other types of devices come out. While we're on the subject of Samsung Galaxy Tab, you can now get the device on a 2-year contract from Verizon for only $300. So you can buy it full retail price for about $499. In Canada, if you're on the Rogers Wireless Network, you can get it on a three or two year plan, I think. It's $399, or you could buy the device straight up for $599. So it's nice to see that when you know, certainly with the cream of the crop for current Android tablets, $299 is not a huge amount of money. So if you have aspirations to buy a new tablet and you're torn between a lot of the mid-range ones, some ones that we've seen lately, such as the Velocity Cruise tablet, their newest one, the T301, Pentagonal Novel, or say the PocketBook IQ 701. This is pretty well like the best tablet that you can get, full flash experience. So yeah, again, $299, not too bad of a price if you're on the Verizon network. Now, let's talk about some other things here. Getting into the realm of e-reader news, you might have heard about a company last year called Spring Design, and they released an Alex e-reader. Now, the Alex e-reader and a Barnes & Noble Nook 3G almost looked identically the same. The Alex e-reader had a better web browser and a bigger touchscreen color interface on the bottom. And if you look at some of the pictures that are around the internet or on the front page of our blog, again, goodereader.com/blog if you're listening to this on iTunes or YouTube. And of course, if you're on the webpage right now, you can simply scroll down the main page and we have a picture there. They look very much the same, so much the same, in fact, that when the Nook 3G originally came out around October of 2009, Alex was visibly pissed because they had actually met with Barnes & Noble about 4 or 5 months prior to iron out a dual-screen e-reader concept where the top half was e-ink and the bottom was full-color LCD touchscreen. So these two companies had met up to co-develop an e-reader. And so they were saying that, you know, we'll collaborate with you guys, do cross-marketing and such. Nothing was signed in writing, but when the Nook 3G was announced and when it actually came out, Spring Design said that, you know, you guys stole our concept. And they basically sued them right away and to try to get the Nook not released. And so the lawsuit kind of pushed back the original release date of the original Nook, which was the Nook Wi-Fi 3G. This court battle that's been going on for about a year and about 4 or 5 months now is still pending. So they Spring Design sued Barnes & Noble for infringing on intellectual property for the original design. So basically the gist of the story was that when both devices came out, Spring Design Alex dropped about 3 or 4 months after the original Nook 3G. Now, the Nook 3G at the time cost $259, and the Alex sold for $399. So a lot of people, when they saw, hey, you know, touchscreen at the bottom, e-ink at the top, they weighed the pros and cons, and most people decided to go with Barnes & Noble, which was their first e-reader offering. They hadn't had much of a track record, not much of a presence in the e-book arena or anything like that, but because they're the United States' largest bookstore chain, people really got behind it because they were able to walk inside of a bookstore and see this, whereas the Spring Design's Alex mainly did things online, although they did eventually get some smaller partnerships. But combined with the court case, which paying lawyers and everything like that really took away from the Alex's penetration to the market, they could have done a lot better. You know, they could have spent that money that they spent battling the courts to do press releases, to manufacture more units, to make the final product come down in price. They could have, you know, spent that money to try to make better arrangements with more chains like Walmart or Future Shop, a Circuit City, The Source. Companies like that where, like, you know, if you don't have your device in a retail setting, it's really hard to just sell this straight up online. Now, of course, Amazon and their Kindle more or less sold it exclusively online. But, you know, they took the money that they were making and they invested in partnerships. So if you live in the States, it's pretty easy to go to a Staples, a Best Buy, a Walmart, walk in there and buy a Kindle, where if you live in the rest of the world, the only way that you can really get it is online through Amazon. But if you don't live in a country that they ship to, or if they, you know, in order to ship to your country, you have to spend a ton of money. There's a company called Shop eReaders, which is our partner site here on Good eReader, and they ship internationally at pretty low prices, and they have a super crazy huge selection of eReaders, including all the Kindles. So basically, Spring Design had their money pulled, their investor support pretty well waned to nothing. And so on a Spring Design main website, if you were to go there, they say it's out of stock. They haven't done any tweets or any Facebook updates or even any type of public comment of any kind since November of 2010. There's an e-reader blog that had contacted the company, and they asked for like a comment, and Spring Design said that they were phasing out the current Alex e-reader within the next 6 months, and they have not announced the product change or introduced any new product. You know, but it looks like Spring Design's had some money pulled. Investor support based on sales, based on a court battle. It's really hard to be able to be a company releasing a first product and just to be fighting so much momentum. Not only is Barnes & Noble much more visible than Spring Design was, you know, like, who really knows, who has ever really even heard of Spring Design before? Unless you're an avid reader of the Good eReader blog, or really, you know, you're really into the eReader tech circles, you know, you're on our forum ourselves, or the Mobile Read forum, or a lot of other forums where people talk about e-readers. Unless you're really sort of there every single day, you're not going to really hear about companies like this. But Spring Design brought it upon themselves. It's a shame that, you know, a solid e-reader product never really got to the best of its abilities, but it looks like it's curtains for them. Now, we know that Borders right now in the States is putting a lot of people out of work. The company is on the verge of bankruptcy. And not only is this, you know, in just the U.S. market, but Borders is outside the U.S. as well. Red Group, who runs the Borders in Australia, and Angus and Robertson and White Cools all go bankrupt. Now, this is a huge story if you live in Australia or New Zealand. So, you know, Angus and Robertson's a huge chain. It's been there for a long time. It's been in business since the 1800s. So this is like a company that's a few centuries old. So they're a long-standing business. And so they're pretty well going into receivership, where they just don't have any money. They're going into a technical term is voluntary administration by its private equity owners. And they're not, you know, so what this really means is right now, 2,500 people in Australia or New Zealand will be out of jobs, not to mention, you know, the 2,500 times two or three that are going to be soon out of work in the States as the company scales back. So the Borders chain in the U.S. is different from the one in Australia. They're different corporations. And so the Australia branch is not closing because the U.S. one is closing. It's just because with the rising sale of e-books and people spreading themselves out too fast and having all this really expensive properties that aren't really generating the money that they used to. So the Red Group, the company that has Borders in Australia, of among many, and its portfolio is going through troublesome times, constant bank problems. They were forced to call in administrators to basically take over. One of the things that really sucks is that if you're a reader, all these stores are going to be closing. There's no really word yet on we know that a lot of them are going to close. We know that when companies go into a voluntary administration, that's pretty well a precursor to filing for bankruptcy. And not only is it a good time to be able to maybe get some deals there, Borders in the U.S. are going through tremendous fire sales right now, where you can buy a lot of books, a lot of gadgets there at next to nothing prices. But although that the story has been picked up on by a few news sources, specifically in Australia and New Zealand, one thing that nobody's mentioned about this is the Kobo e-reader. A Kobo main distribution was these companies. They were Whitecools, they were the Red Group, they were Angus and Robertson's, the Borders in Australia. This is where Kobo had set up its partnership in order to distribute the Kobo Wireless and the original Kobo e-reader. So now that these companies are basically all shutting down, where does that leave Kobo? How are they going to be able to market their product effectively to the Australian and New Zealand population if the companies that they dealt with are going under? So Kobo, we've tried to solicit Kobo's comments. We've emailed their PR group. We've emailed their business brass to try to get some sort of comment out of them. We believe that they probably had not really heard much about this, and they haven't mentioned anything officially. So one has to wonder how much they're even aware of this even happening. So Borders and Whitecools are almost the biggest bookstore group in Australia. They have 2.5 million titles in its library. It's going to be a very hectic next few months. So we really hope that all these bookstore chains don't close down, but it really looks like that this is possibly the end, and they'll divide the assets. This is not totally confirmed that it's over, but the Red Group and Whitecools and Angus and Robertson's, it's officially all in voluntary administration. So the future does not look good, especially with the Borders in the U.S. crashing. It's really going to be hard to get any type of investor money behind this, because people are saying that what's happening in Australia and New Zealand right now is the same thing that's happening in the States and generally worldwide. Really large bookstore chains are not making money now. A lot of people are getting ebook readers, getting ebooks, and they're buying less books. And it just makes sense to buy a new hardcover fiction or nonfiction book at a bookstore, roughly $35 to about $40 or more, depending on where you live. Whereas if you have an e-reader, that same book that came out the exact same day is only about $9 to maybe $10, $12 at the most. So a lot of readers, that's what they're gravitating towards. It just makes sense to invest in a $150 e-reader, and once you're done your 10th book, the device is paid for itself and you've saved a ton of money on books. So for people that have large reading habits, people are investing in e-readers to read outside when they're commuting and so on. And then I know a lot of the same people that are buying tablets, so late at night under low light circumstances, they have they have an LCD screen that's backlit, so you can actually read in as you're going to bed with just the lamp on, where it's a little bit harder to do that with an e-reader because it just requires more ambient light sources. But the proliferation of e-books is directly arbitrated towards Borders and Red Group and Angus and Robertson and those other companies on the verge and at the very cusp of going bankrupt. So in one case, it's sort of like a give and take relationship. On one hand, it's a good thing that ebooks are becoming more popular and ebook reader prices are coming down, as well as the technology is getting a lot better. So getting e-readers today is a lot better than it was buying e-readers 2 or 3 years ago. Part of it is just the screen technology they had. At first you had e-ink, and then you had, like you see in the new Kindle e-readers, the Kindle 3 and the Sony 350, 650. They have e-ink Pearl technology, and then Hanbon and a few other companies are using e-ink Triton technology, which uses color e-ink as well as the ability to have faster page turns. You can see, and read comic books and manga and all sorts of different things that you couldn't really read before on an e-reader. So the technology on e-readers is greatly advancing, and the prices for these actual models aren't too high. You can buy a really good quality one for under $200 now, where, even just 3-4 years ago, a really good one cost about $400 or more, $400 to $450. So, as e-book readers and e-books are more accessible, even libraries now are having, 50,000 e-books available to read on your e-reader, where you can just take them from the library for 2 weeks, read a few e-books, and then they disappear off your e-reader. So in a digital era now, that there's a lot more alternatives than having to go to a bookstore as the only way to read books. So e-books aren't directly responsible for borders and everything like that going down, but it's the economy as well right now. Economy worldwide isn't doing that great, especially the economy in the States, which has the trickle-down effect to other countries. But then you have just the old mentality of even Walmart's in trouble these days. They have too many locations, they have too big of a buildings, and not enough people coming in and spending copious amounts of money anymore. They almost expanded at a geometric rate. These big box retailers and big box, bookstores and just big box stores in general, right? Where you have in an average town 2 or 3 different locations, and obviously it's going to fail because you're too visible, you're paying too much rent, you have too much overhead, as well as, employees and their benefits and their 401ks if you live in the States, or RSPs or GICs if you live in Canada. It's a mess, So part of it's the economy, part of it is the proliferation of ebooks, and part of it is just the current economic times. So it's really hard to isolate any one reason why Borders is failing right now. A lot of pundits will cite a ton of reasons, but at Good E-Reader, we don't really mince words. We just sort of report on the facts as well as throw in our sort of own opinions and, speculation, but we let you know if it's pure speculation. But what we can tell you definitively is that the entire huge bookstore arena in Australia, New Zealand is in grave danger of being all closed down. So Dems are the news, folks, and sometimes the news is a little bit, isn't always just rosy with new tablets and e-readers being launched, but you have companies like Spring Design going under, a lot of other things going under. So what we're going to do is we're going to play a little song right now, and I want to wrap to you about Barnes & Noble's in-store events happening, not only today, but going forward into the future.
Yippee-yay, there'll be no wedding bells for today. 'Cause I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle,
jingle, jangle,
as I go riding merrily along.
Jingle, jangle,
and they sing, oh, ain't you glad you're single?
Jingle, jangle,
and that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Jingle, jangle. Oh,
Lily Bell.
Oh, Lily Bell.
Oh, Lily Bell.
Oh, Lily Bell.
Though I may have done some fooling, this is why I never fell. 'Cause I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle.
Jingle, jangle.
As I go riding merrily along.
Jingle, jangle.
They sing, oh, ain't you glad you're single.
Jingle, jangle.
And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Jingle, jangle.
Spurs that jingle, jangle.
I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle.
As I jingle, go riding merrily
as
along.
As I go riding merrily
and
along.
They sing, oh, ain't you glad?
And they sing, oh, ain't you glad?
And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Oh, Lily Bell. Oh, Lily Bell. Though I may have done some fooling, this is why I never fell. 'Cause
never
I got spurs that jingle, jangle,
I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle.
As I
jingle,
go riding merrily
as
along.
As I go riding merrily along.
And they sing, oh, ain't you glad
and they sing, oh, ain't you glad
and
you're single.
And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Hey guys, we're back at the Goody Reader Radio Show again. It's Marcus speaking, and we do these radio shows every few times a week, or sometimes a little bit more, depending on if there is a lot of news to report. It seems as though ever since CES happened in Vegas, which is the Consumer Electronics Show, there's a ton of news, and some weeks are a little bit lighter on news than others, but it really looks like the last few weeks are really heating up as people are trying to maximize the things that they do in the first quarter of the year, as well as releasing products right at the second quarter to boost fiscal profits. And this is why devices come out when they do. It's not only can we put out a really big competing device out in the same week, but a lot of companies have different fiscal quarters than each other, so sometimes you see releases happening a little bit earlier, a little bit later, and so on. So I would mention that the song that you just listened to was a great artist named Tex Ritter, and the song was entitled I Got Spurs That Jingle Jangle, and the first song that we heard at the beginning of the show was Gnarls Barkley playing a great tune entitled I Am Crazy, and I often think that I am. Barnes & Noble has been launching a few in-store events. They recently did one in Santa Monica today, and it was a Pubit event, which Pubit is Barnes & Noble's own independent publishing platform. Now, you might be familiar with Amazon's digital text platform. It's pretty well the most famous, and it's been around the longest. In effect, Pubit allows independent people to submit works in text, RTF, doc, docx, and other formats, and their system, once you register, will convert your book book of poems, whatever you're doing, even a book of short stories, and convert it to EPUB format. And upon submission within 24 to 48 hours, you'll find out if it's been accepted. And if it is, you'll actually be listed in the Barnes & Noble e-bookstore. So if anybody has an electronic device where the Barnes & Noble app can be installed, and this is Android devices like tablets, computers, smartphones, even a lot of devices have this as well as on the computer. So the Pubit program has been a resounding success, and it has 11,000 published works. And this has only been happening in the last 4 months. So Pubit only launched itself later last year. So in 4 months, they have 11,000 published works, and 35 of these works are in the Barnes & Noble top 200 bestsellers. So what the event that they did featured authors like H.P. Mallory, Beth Orzorf, and a lot of other self-publishers that were there. And they basically did a panel. The executive producer of Precious was also there. And so it was a big in-store event. And what they did was just tell people what Pubit was all about, how it affected, you know, their readership, how it enabled them to basically, you know, write some great works that are pretty popular. Like H.P. Mallory did Toil and Trouble, Fireburn, and The Cauldron Bubble, and To Kill a Warlock. She called Pubit an incredible experience, one of the best decisions I ever made. So she does paranormal romance books, and she's had such success with Pubit that she just got signed to a 3-book deal with a major publishing house. It's unknown yet which one. So in the Santa Monica Pubit event, this is the first one that they did, and We do know that they are going to be running more, but we don't know specifically at what locations and what dates. But some dates that we do know for some Barnes & Noble events is February the 26th, customers who visit any of Barnes & Noble's more than 700 stores and take a guided tour of the Nook Color with a bookseller will get a free hot cup of Joe. You know, you can get iced coffees and iced cappuccinos and all this type of stuff. So at the Barnes & Noble Cafe, so you can get some free Joe by just checking out what the Nook Color is all about. We're a big fan of independent publishing and books that enable authors to write. So we're a big fan of Pubit and other companies like Smashwords that allow people to publish not only with them, but they'll actually submit your works to other companies. Now, I mentioned Amazon's a digital text platform that's been around for a while. And as you can see, Barnes & Noble for the Pubit programs experienced tremendous growth in a very limited time. Now, I want to give you sort of my take on this, because I actually think that this is kind of underrated and a lot of people are missing out on this, is that Barnes & Noble has a lot of bookstores. They're the U.S., the largest bookstore chain. I mean, that's no secret. But now that they're actually taking Pubit to its actual locations, it can actually draw authors, you know, from a certain geo pattern, right? So if you live in a certain area, and that store in your area or the store, you know, an hour away is having a bunch of authors there talking about a way that you can self-publish your own works. A lot of people that are not keeping up with the latest news on programs like this, or they read blogs like ourselves every day, a lot of people might have not even know something like that exists, especially with the type of people that, you know, you're very busy, you know, you have kids, a job, a life, and you know, but you like to maybe write in your spare time, or maybe you wrote, you know, growing up as a little kid, you know, scribbling in your notebook, you know, writing poems or short stories, and you've never lost that. It's stayed with you your life. And, you know, maybe you'll hear on the news, or maybe you hear, or even just be at the store when it's happening, and they have a bunch of self-published authors there saying, you know, you can just, like, submit it to us in, you know, doc or text format and get your book listed, and then, you know, tell your friends and get them to buy books. And what it comes down to is Barnes & Noble's taking advantage of its tangible retail spaces. It's taking advantage of the fact that it has large bookstores, and this is something Amazon doesn't. Amazon's purely to their bookstores, and the way that they sell books are all virtual and online, whereas Barnes & Noble sells books digitally and are evident online, but they're so entrenched in American culture that I think that they could probably promote Pubit, if they do it right, in a shorter period of time and grow it to a huge degree. Mainly because that if they keep staging these Pubit events at, you know, key locations, right? Because you're not going to just be doing this in the middle of nowhere, but you're going to do it in key locations like San Francisco, you're going to do it in New York, Chicago, big centers, right? Where there's just like a lot of people, and they know that if they stage one of these events, they can expect X number of people coming to check it out. But if Barnes & Noble is serious about Pubit, they're going to continue running these events. It sounds like, from everything that we've heard from people that have attended the event, as well as some of Barnes & Noble's press releases that they've issued after the fact, it was a resounding success. And I really think that they can very well double those 11,000 people that have published works to increase it to 22 or 30,000 if they were to even just run these a few times a month at different locations, to get indie artists there, hyping the service up, and just making, you know, people aware of it. And the more that they do that, the more, you know, news agencies will pick up on it, and it'll just be more visible. Because right now, Pubit is sort of like a grassroots effort. If you know a bit about Barnes & Noble, you may know a little bit about it, but it's certainly not promoted in the stores, other than this first event that they had, so hopefully that'll change. But it's good news that they're actually... Pubit's a great program. We have a link on our main page so you can check it out. There was a lot of drama, going back to tablet PCs for a second, on the Motorola Zoom. Because its first partner in this is Verizon, a lot of people were all up in arms that even if you bought the Motorola Zoom for $799, if you just bought it outright, Verizon was still going to charge you 1 month of data. They announced this probably less than about a week ago, and blogs everywhere, news agencies everywhere picked up on this, and I think a lot of people were visibly pissed that if I want to buy the device and I want to use it just for Wi-Fi, why can't I do that if I'm buying the device outright? I'm not paying it to be on a contract. So Verizon rescinded that, so now you can just buy the device outright and you don't have to actually pay for that first month of data plan. If you want to grab it on a 2-year contract instead of $7.99, it's $5.99, so a little bit more accessible, and it will be running on the Verizon 4G LTE network. Speaking of the Verizon LTE network, a lot of people don't even know what that means, or they don't know what 4G means. Obviously, people know by now what 3G is. It's hyped up enough on commercials as far as devices that support it. But 4G is pretty well the next gen in terms of speed. We wrote an interesting piece on this today, and I kind of want to let people know exactly what 4G and LTE actually is if you're a Verizon customer. So it stands for long-term evolution. Up until now, you've really been dealing with 3G, HSPA networks, and a lot of devices now, especially like smartphones and tablets more than anything. If you're not on a Wi-Fi network, your videos are not really that great quality. You can't really do voice-to-voice or sort of teleconferencing where you're using things like Skype or any type of like video conferencing. Unless you're on Wi-Fi, it's really, really spotty. Now, 4G is seeking to eliminate those sort of things. The Verizon 4G network is functioning on a 700 megahertz band, And it has its own wireless spectrum, whereas a lot of other frequencies are shared between different countries. So having its own exclusive spectrum will allow for easy transfer of high-def files to travel fast in both directions. This is pivotal for the growth of video conferencing and other type of, you know, FaceTime type things. The 4G LTE network is really only available in 38 cities right now, which covers about 35% of the current subscribers who subscribe to Verizon. The company is quickly building more towers across the country, but it really won't be totally up for everyone again until 2013. Now, one of the really benefits of this is not only to get real two-way video going, but it will allow you, if you're watching 1080p videos in real time, if you're watching things off of Netflix or any of those type of services, or even if you listen to a lot of tunes on things like Spotify, your generation will be, you know, your speed and bandwidth will be greatly increased. A lot of people are saying that in some cases the LTE network will be superior to current generation speed used in the home. And one of the big things that it may have in the future is two-way gaming or multiplayer gaming. As far as tablets, you look at the average tablet that was made last year, you had the Apple iPad, which really didn't have great specs underneath the hood, but the content made it great. Whereas a lot of Android tablets really didn't even have access to the Google Android market. It's not really until now did Android release Honeycomb, which was an operating system exclusively made for tablets. But as we look forward to late 2011, early 2012, we're going to see tablets that have dual core processors as the norm, as well as increased graphics accelerators. You have even tablets that are coming now in 3D, and then you're going to have devices like the Nintendo DS in 3D. You already have 3D smartphones, and by about summer to about autumn, there's a fair number of tablets coming out, especially by companies named Elocity, that are going to be 3D tablets. So if you look at dual core processing, much more RAM, better graphic accelerators, they're easily made to be portable, and a lot of them use the same components inside. You know, you have the Intel Atom, you have the NVIDIA Tegra, so you have very limited parts being used underneath the hood. Now, you know who people who consider the parts underneath the hood to be very important? Game developers. You look at developers who develop for computers, Xbox, Sony, and such. They know that the hardware requirements that they have to work with. If you know how many, you know, the average processor of a unit, if you know how much RAM it has, if you know if it supports 3D or not, those are the big requirements to actually put better quality, you know, AA title games on that sort of platform. So the reason why it's a bit easier to develop for, say, the Xbox or the PlayStation, or even looking at more mobile devices like Nintendo DS, Sony PSP, and so on, is that they know the hardware and they know the limitations of the hardware. If a lot of the tablets of 2011, 2012 are virtually using the same hardware, that makes it very easy for game developers to put better games on it. If you look at the iPad now, it has games like by id. You have Rage, which looks tremendously well. It's one of the best-looking games on the iPad. And that's just a precursor of what's to come. So if you look at better quality games, they're on the cusp. EA's gone into a lot of action on the iPad, but they've really made a lot of board games. Sure, they just put out a hockey game and an NFL game, but it's really game developing for tablets exclusively is really an untapped market. And as tablets mature and develop over the course of this year and 2012, hopefully we're going to see in 4G networks, you know, AT&T's developing one, Verizon has one. Canada, we're a little bit left out in terms of there's really no 4G networks at all right now, so it kind of sucks for us, and we'll see what happens there. But in the States, where things like 4G are really evident, especially in major urban centers, that hopefully better quality games will be around a corner. But not only that, but games that support multiplayer, or even if you consider like MMO or RTSs, where you're playing against three or four other people at the same time, having that bandwidth like 4G will be able to actually support that. So I'm pretty excited about the future of gaming, especially on tablets. And that's sort of one really avenue of tablets that a lot of people don't talk about. Or, you know, I check the major tech blogs every day, and I keep myself pretty well read and literate on current events and things like that. So a lot of people really aren't talking about games on tablets. You know, a lot of people are talking about games on PC, Facebook games, the rise of casual games, or games on consoles that have that social interaction, which will send rewards and achievements and spam your Facebox or Twitter box. But I think a lot of people are sleeping on tablet and getting into just developing games exclusively for Android, you know, for iOS. I mean, there's a lot of like fun little casual games, but there's really no serious games. You know, certainly there's no MMO. There's no type of, you know, StarCraft Lite or anything like that. Even like the old RTS games like Kingdoms, or, you know, even the old Warcraft. If you look at Warhammer and things like that, those are all great franchises, and I think all those would transcend really well to color touchscreen. And certainly if you look at the rise of 3D tablets that are going to be coming out this year, LG is making one, we mentioned Alocity is making one, a lot of companies are going to be coming out with 3D tablets. So not only will you be able to make kind of cool touchscreen interactive games, but you'll also be able to incorporate 3D elements inside of that. So the future really looks bright for tablets, unlike netbooks, which were really the fad last year to the year before. 2010, people are saying, was all about the e-reader. 2011 looks like to be the year of the tablet. So it'll be interesting to see the fostering of growth and really how the market embraces these devices. Certainly a lot of people are embracing, you know, the iPad in terms of sales. And when nice devices like the Galaxy Tab only really cost you $300 now, the future looks nice. Although if you look at the Motorola Zoom, $799, ouch. For Goody Reader, this is Marcus. You've been listening to the Goody Reader Radio Show. We do these shows a few times a week. At Goody Reader, we have all the latest news on ebooks, e-readers, digital publishing, Slate, tablet, PCs. We often do anywhere between 6 and 10 articles a day. So if you're into anything that we're talked about on a show, or if you're a reader or maybe a visitor on our forums that we have, where you're getting your tech support, guides and tutorials, firmware updates, and so on, we appreciate everybody who listens to our shows, and we definitely appreciate everybody that comes and checks our articles out every day, or even watches our YouTube reviews on the latest e-readers and tablets on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/user/goodereader. So if you liked everything that you heard, try following us on Twitter, liking us on Facebook, and just keep on doing what you do when you do it. For Goody Reader, this is Marcus, and everybody take care.